Welcome to Amber Energy, the podcast. Each episode, we talk about what it takes to be the best entrepreneur you can be and how to take your business or your client's business to the next level when it comes to graphic design, branding, and so much more. Let's get started. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Amber Energy, the podcast. My name is Rachel Sedwick. I am your host and I'm joined by our amazing Amber Jacobs, my co-host. And we are recording episode 2, which is about how to come back from setbacks in your career. So this is more on the business side of things as far as this podcast goes. Amber Energy, the podcast, is all about things, you know, business from a business owner or entrepreneurial standpoint, career advice, things like that, in addition to the world of graphic design and everything branding. So, Amber, hello. How are you doing today?
Oh, we're doing just peachy, thanks.
Yeah. Well, so we are both recording right now. We both just changed our shirts so we can have good continuity for the YouTube version of this podcast. But we went over our highlights from the week in our last podcast. So now I'll ask you, what are you drinking right now? Do you have coffee in hand, water? What's
right now? We've vodka. The water. I wish it was a thing of vodka. It's a little too early for that.
Tequila.
I wish that'd be so good. But you know, I've already finished my coffee and I'm onward to water. And
yeah, I finished my coffee this morning too. We both have our beautiful jewel toned water bottles. Our amber, the awesome amber signature water vessel.
Yes,
it's quite. You're great. On the team. You need one of those, right?
It's a pretty thing to drink your water out of.
It is. It's nice to have on your.
I don't know if it's really zhuzhy, as they say. It's zhuzhy, you know, for crystals and things like that, infusing the water with crystal energy, but it's darn pretty to drink out of. So we'll go.
I agree. I love it.
Thanks.
All right. So our topic today is how to come back from setbacks in your career. And this can be, you know, you've been a designer for your entire career. So, we'll talk about that, but it's also going to be able to transfer into really any industry, any type of career that you're in. So I'm excited to get into this and just hear your take and just different ways, tactics that you have experienced and used in your own career to move forward and get to where you are now, a badass business owner.
Here we are.
All right. So first question, how can you recall the first time you ever hit a big obstacle in your career, and what was it?
Yeah. So, you know, Amber had worked three jobs through college to support herself, but still had to take on a fair amount of student loan debt.
Oh yeah.
Then I took on internship that only paid a small stipend for 3 months, all that while commuting from Federal Way to Lower Queen Anne. So my credit card bill also had begun to pile up during that time.
Wow, I bet.
So I remember when publicists could not hire, it was just everybody was on hiring freezes. And I couldn't hack that commute anymore. And I didn't have any money. I was in credit card debt. And I remember just being, oh, fuck, like, what the hell am I going to do? I refused to move home with mom and dad in Port Orchard. I was never going to ask. My pride was too much. And it was such a crazy time. Eventually, some of those informational interviews worked out. And I ended up getting a gig for FCB, but not as a traditional graphic designer. It was for some bookbinding work. In the meantime, I had a colleague at Publicis offer up a room to me with her and her boyfriend at their house in
the
university district. So I didn't have to commute from Federal Way. So now at least I was closer. I had a room in university district. And then I could easily either drive or bus to downtown. Well, actually it was international district at the time, for Foot Quantum Building, FCB. And I remember that just being like this really crazy moment, because it wasn't quite for the amount of money that I was hoping for, but hey, something was better than nothing and I needed to make some money right now. Yeah. But it was a really cool job, really cool. I mean, I had gone to school for print production, so I was really into bookbinding anyways, and it was really tactical. So that first gig was actually to do Japanese side stitch books for executives for HP and Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, so wow.
I actually had in the paste up room, I worked with Monica to, you know, she had designed this book and this box and these Mahjong tiles and all these things. And she had designed it and was printing them all out. I was working with a printer. I had bought all the materials to produce these 25, but I ended up doing 50 because I had to double it, side stitch books for these executives for this like beautiful brand box that we were going to give to these executives after like a job well done.
Did you think when you were in college that you'd ever have like a job of like stitching together books?
I mean, I don't know. It was something that I enjoyed in college, learned how to do. But I remember that being like my first gig, and like I did the first 25, and I had kind of like, it was not necessarily a true Japanese side stitch, because with true Japanese side stitch, I wonder if it's here. Hold on. It's right here. It's really, really cool.
Oh, you kept one?
Oh, of course I did. I keep these things. Well, here's number two. So here's number two, Kung Fu Panda, but see this called a French groove here?
Oh yeah. Is that a bamboo stick?
Yeah, this is a bamboo stick, and it's a French groove and Japanese style. Wow. But normally French grooves are not a part of a traditional Japanese side stitch, mm-hmm. but we had put one in there. In the first 25 books, I'd only done one for the front, but they didn't like it. So we had to do a French groove on the back to make it so it all the way open.
Oh, so it would lay flat?
It would lay flat. And so the first 25, we didn't like the groove, and there was something like, it was almost like we'd done like a couple that was like, whatever. And so I ended up doing another 25. Plus they liked them so much, we did more. So I ended up having to buy more material, and then cut this bamboo, make it half the width, so that way it laid flat in there, and then stick this whole thing up. And I had to like get all this chipboard and like glue this all together and punch all the holes, you know, for it, and then sit there and stitch them all up. So that was like my first gig out of college, was this Japanese side stitch for Kung Fu Panda. It was pretty fun and random. I'm trying to find the first one. I can't find it right now. But that was my first gig. And then from there, because we liked me so much, Mark Janke and Monica, I ended up, and Christina, these are some old names I haven't heard for a while. they liked me so much, and I ended up doing some other design work, like print advertising and some various other things for Providence and Kung Fu Panda and T-Mobile. So there's some other things. So that was my first main gig out of college, was working for them. But then that was like probably my first like moment. But then again, they hit that recession, and then I kind of got laid off again. And I remember being again on probably like First Avenue in Seattle going, I don't know what I'm going to do. Here I go.
I'm living here and I need to figure it out.
Yeah, because I needed to, you know, afford life. So I remember eventually like getting a call from this woman named Tori for Razorfish. She needed some design support for Razorfish or Microsoft. And it wasn't really anything that I knew how to do. They needed some like landing pages for some laptops for Microsoft and some production work for images. I needed to like cut out the backgrounds of these laptops on white and do a website for them. I didn't know how to do that. So I had to learn how to do that. Google was my best friend.
So that was one of your fake it till you make it moments.
Oh yeah. So I just remember like, but in that time, like I had to find that roommate situation was a temporary room situation. So then I was also trying to find a new place to live. So I actually had also then, I pretty much called a girlfriend of mine from a colleague from college being like, I don't really have a place to go. I need to get out of this house that I'm currently living in UW. And what are you doing, Wallace? I need some help. she wasn't doing amazing either. We were all both just trying to make it. And she was living in a basement apartment in North Capitol Hill. Okay. And the goddamn bathroom wasn't even a part of the fucking apartment. And, you know, she was gracious and an awesome friend. And let me stay with her for another few more months. So she kind of had like this basement apartment. So she, but it was kind of like a weird split wall apartment where it kind of had two rooms, quasi two rooms. So she stayed in one room and I stayed in the other one on a futon on the floor. And it was like literally a two-butt kitchen. Like you would walk in, the width of the kitchen open space was the width of your body. And in front of you was a two-burner stove. You had to get out of the kitchen to open up the refrigerator. And then just one tiny sink and a couple of cabinets around you. And that was like your two-butt kitchen. And then you had to like shimmy between the stove and the refrigerator to get to the back door to then unlock it, to go across the hallway underneath the staircase to go to your bathroom. In your bathroom, the toilet was underneath the staircase of this apartment. And so you had to like hunch underneath the stairs to go to the bathroom to go use the toilet. And then the shower was only 2 foot by 2 foot. So don't fucking drop anything because it was hard to get. But Wallace, you know, it was better than nothing. And Wallace was gracious, even let me stay there. And at least was in Seattle. And I was from Seattle to Razorfish, which was on First Avenue, just up the way or just down the way a little way. So it was an easy bus ride away or a walk away if I wanted to on a nice day. And we were both just trying to make it in Seattle and, you know, stick to our careers of graphic design. And I remember those being some, like those 6 months after Publicis, between living with that a colleague and then living with my design friend. And between
those session when hiring was like not,
no one was hiring.
Yeah.
I remember having to do some pretty, like, I remember at one point also taking off, because I kept getting turned down at interviews because I was too green, or they could tell I didn't have enough work experience, right? So don't say that you're too young, but they say you don't have enough work experience.
Yeah.
And they were also just hiring senior rate designers for junior rates because they knew they could.
Well, because the senior designers were like, they were hitting hard too, right? So they were
they had families and mortgages to try to hold on to.
Yeah.
And so they were doing also whatever they could to hold on to their livelihoods. And so I remember at one point, taking off my dates off my resume and that suddenly being like a door opener for me. Like I just
really,
yeah. Cause I'd already by that point, you know, I could put on, you know, Publicis, Razorfish and Draft FCB, mm-hmm. but if I didn't have and I didn't put my graduation date on there. So that way, if I had just three agencies, oh, and the Wade King Rec Center, you know, then at that point I was starting to get more phone calls because they didn't know how old I was.
Yeah.
It looked impressive enough to, you know, be hireable.
Mm-hmm. They saw that you had some good work on your resume and they didn't
have some good agencies on my resume.
And the first look wasn't about like, oh, this girl's really young. She just graduated college like last year.
Yeah.
They were just looking at the work. That's smart.
Exactly. So that was like one of the first things I did was like, okay, I'm gonna dates off my resume and see if that worked. And lo and behold, it did. It was just more of like a hunch than anything. So they're like, God, I'm pretty sure they know when I graduated. This is not helping me out any. So
yeah, might as well try it.
So it was a good try. And that once I get in with people, right? If I got the interview, I was really good at talking on my feet and being really friendly and genuine. So it was, once I could get on the phone or once I can get in front of them, it was kind of like a no-brainer, like, yeah, hired, like, let's go. Yeah.
Excellent.
So I would say that's like the first crazy obstacle I had to overcome was
just the recession and all of the crazy
mountain of student loan debt, credit card debt, and trying to find a place to live in Seattle while trying to find a place to work was like my first crazy big obstacle as a designer coming into the world.
Yeah. So fast forward to when you were doing more of the agency work, you know, you were working as a designer in all the different agencies you worked in. What were some of the setbacks within those jobs, not related to like the hiring and firing or laid off and like between job stuff, like in the trenches, in the jobs?
Oh, I mean, they're just, you know, you're always dealing with the churn of it all. Like, so trying to like manage the churn of client requests and due dates and work back schedules, rounds of internal reviews and external reviews. And so there's just always like kind of that craziness of trying to manage that. You know, there's lots of difference of opinions when it comes to the subjective world sometimes of graphic design. Mm-hmm. So one person might think this is awesome. And then the next person's like, I think that's 2 pixels off. So it's just like, you know, there's a lot of subjectiveness in the industry and, you know, what people think is good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah. You kind of have to develop that's probably the point in your career that I feel like you probably developed your thick skin that you have now, right? Because you have to you're a butt in the seat. Like you said, like you're hired. You're not the business owner. You're not the client. You just have to do what you're told to do with your skills as a designer. But like, tell me how about developing that thick skin with receiving feedback and acting on it and stuff like that.
Yeah. You just kind of have to just like take it in and be like, okay, I hear you. And you really have to just kill them with a smile because you really don't have any other choice. Like, it's not worth the bad reputation in the industry of being hard to work with. It's not worth the bad reputation of, you know, getting an attitude, right? It's not worth that. So you have to kind of like just suck it up and be like, all right, I'll try again. And you have to just keep trying and trying because that's just the name of the game. It's just what you have to do. Cause I just knew that the reputation wasn't worth squandering over something as silly as a display ad or an email banner or whatever. Yeah. It's just not worth it in the grand scheme of things. It's like, all right, it's just a project, like, moving on. Like, you guys gotta keep
moving. Yeah. And using it as an opportunity for you to grow instead of seeing it as an obstacle. Like, someone doesn't like how you did this logo or this landing page. Like, okay, how can I get better? Instead of just focusing on the negative side of it. Right.
Yeah. And a good creative director will help readjust you, right? So I remember having some really good creative directors that was like, all right, well, then what you did was good, but I think we need to push in this direction. And then they would show you examples of kind of what they meant. So you kind of get you get redirected, hopefully. Hopefully there's good redirection. So that's kind of where that comes from. But agency life is an interesting, fun, awesome place, but it's also got its, you know, there's also a lot of uppity creative directors that are not so nice.
I can tell, for those of you that are only listening to this podcast, you can tell Amber is trying to like hold back all the like, it was also really shitty.
You definitely come in contact with some art directors that think their shit don't stink, which is not always fun to work with,
but it's all a learning experience.
But it's all learning, and they're also very experienced and talented. And maybe they know something that you don't, right?
So they got there for a reason. Yeah. Right?
So maybe they've got some inkling or some kind of they're reading between the lines that you're not able to see, and you know maybe they know best. But definitely sometimes it was really hard to work with those folk.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't know best, and they're just an asshole. Right?
Yeah, sometimes they're just assholes. I mean, sometimes they are just asshole creative directors, and that's just the way that is. So it's all good. You know, it was a lot of fun. Made me who I am today.
Exactly. So speaking of that, what do you think are some mistakes that you think young professionals, whether they're in the design field or not, young professionals make that hold them back? What would your advice be to them?
Not communicative enough. They don't act like eager beavers. They just kind of sit back and wait for it to happen. I feel like you have to be more of an entrepreneurial spirit and like go get after it and ask like how you can help and what you can do, or look for opportunities of how you can help and how you can make it better. I feel like a lot of people in my industry tend to just kind of sit back and just wait for the work to come to them, and like, they're kind of like laissez-faire. I think if I could give a tip to young people, it'd be like, just be eager, like look for the opportunity of how you can help and improve and make things better. And I think, you know, asking how you can help or what you can do, or is there something internally or externally that can improve the business and move it forward? I think that's the mindset that young people need to have, or just in general, people need to have.
Yeah. Finding ways to add value to whoever you're working for and like make their job easier. That's something that myself as a professional in the corporate world has found too, is like, sometimes you have to fake it till you make it. And, you might not have something that you're supposed to be working on right now, but if you can go out and find something, like find a project, make it for yourself, like give value in ways that you can.
Be an asset. Add value and be an asset to them. Even if it's the most like crappiest of jobs, like sometimes you just got to take it, and they'll see that and they'll remember that. And you know, you'll probably be on the top of the list for something really great.
Yeah. They'll see that you have the want to be there instead of just being one of those people you're talking about, very laissez-faire, like I'm just waiting for things to come to me, because not everyone is going to give you stuff. Sometimes you're going to be working for someone who is waiting for you to come to them.
Well, see, you make that impact too. It's like, Amber was willing to do that really shit job. with a smile even.
And for this fun project now.
But now, you know, I know it was a crappy job, but you know, I got this really good job. You know what? I'm going to give it to Amber because she's rad and we're going to continue this relationship.
Yeah. So next question is, how can also advice for other designers is how can some designers build their portfolio or improve as designers while say they're between jobs? Because I know you've been there quite a bit in your career where you've been between jobs, you're looking for a job, and you still have to pay the bills, right?
Yeah. So I feel like what you can do is just obviously keep improving your portfolio and your resume, but also that network, right? So Whenever I was between jobs, I would, you know, always kind of look back on who I've already worked with and ping them like, hey, how's it going? Long time no talk. How can I help? And so there was always that like staying top of mind to either pass gigs or pass people that maybe didn't hire me, maybe weren't available for an informational interview, maybe whatever it was, but I'd always kind of like ping myself back to the top of their inbox and just say hi.
Yeah.
So just say hi, right? So, hey, how's it going? Long time no talk. How's your dog? How's your wife? How's your kids? I don't care what it is. And you just kind of bing yourself back to top. And that didn't matter if it was, you know, the producers at Edelman or a publicist, it didn't matter if it was a marketing director or an account executive or whatever it was. I just say, drop them a line and say hi. So that was always something that I was just kind of kept on top. I also was really interested in the Seattle Addy Awards. And so I'd kind of take a glance at those and kind of see what art directors or creative agencies were up to and doing. And so that was a great way to kind of in with like getting an informational interview, like, hey, Mr. Art Director or Mrs. Art Director for such and such agency, I just noticed you won X, Y, and Z Gold Addy Awards for X, Y, Z project. I would love to learn more about that project and what you guys did in the process. I'm a new graduate from X, Y, Z College and I'd love to learn more. Can I buy you a cup of coffee? And so
that's awesome.
Kind of like building out that, that network was something I was always like really into, you know, and staying top of mind. So that's kind of what I'd always do between jobs in addition to adding to my portfolio and resume.
Yeah. I think the importance of networking goes hand in hand with never burning a bridge, right? Yes. So if you don't agree with something that your creative director did or said to you one time, like, don't get pissed off. Don't yell at them. Don't quit or, you know, whatever. Keep the relationship a solid, positive one because you never know when you might want or need them again.
Well, right? The thing about Seattle industry or even just the industry in period is that we all kind of do this, you know, musical chairs every few years.
Mm-hmm.
We all move up and they'll remember you, promise.
Yeah.
If you had a bad relationship with them 5 years ago, and now they're suddenly maybe the art director, creative director over here, or maybe they're an owner now of XYZ new company, you know, mm-hmm. if you weren't in their good graces, they're going to, you know, maybe you wanted that opportunity. Well, you're shit out of luck.
Yeah.
So just kind of remember that the industry is in musical chairs and we're all moving up and around together. And maybe they're the recruiter. Maybe now they're a hiring manager. Or maybe now they're a whatever. And now they're the gatekeeper to somewhere where you really wanted to be, but because you burned them a few years back.
If you kind of left a bad taste in their mouth, you don't even have to burn them. Just,
it's just
that kind of like,
they were rough to work with. They flaked on me. You know, just whatever it is, like
mm-hmm.
I'm done with them. Like, I don't want to work with them. Like,
but they can remember that, like, oh yeah, Amber, she asked about how my dog was the last time we talked or something like
or
that.
Or she remembered like, I had a surgery or she remembered whatever. Right. So it's just like, oh wow. She remembers things. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So those kind of little things go a long ways. Oh, and I was always really big on writing a handwritten thank you card after every informational interview.
And you're still into that pretty strongly, right?
Oh, very strongly. I would get jobs. I would get like the nicest like replies and whatever's, and people would remember me in the industry because I was like, huh, Amber wrote me a handwritten thank you card for an informational interview. And that's been something that stayed with me my entire career. I always write in a thank you card. I had always had a stack of like thank you cards mm-hmm. in the glove box of my car. And after an informational interview, I would write it up and send it out to the address that I had. And they would have it within a couple of days. And that was like always like a nice feel good after everything I ever did.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So how kind of switching gears towards, like, you know, more along the lines of your career and the path that you're on, you know, you're working towards a goal. How do you know you're on the right path as a business professional?
When you don't know what else you'd like to do. Because I've asked myself that before, like, what else would I be good at? Or what else should I be doing in this world? And if you don't have a really good answer, then I guess what you're doing is just fucking fine.
Yeah, until something else comes along, if it ever
does. Right. I mean, I've got a lot of great reviews. People like my work, or now our work. And I really just don't know what else I would do. Like, literally, since the time I was 17 years old, I've always wanted to be a graphic designer.
Yeah.
Or I've wanted to be a graphic designer. And, like, I really don't know what else I would do. I mean, I've considered being a recruiter, and I've considered, you know, being a project manager, getting out of the trenches. But at the end of the day, I don't know if I can do that either. So I'm
It's not fueled by your passion, which is art and
like, I draw silly things in my sketchbook all the time. So I just don't know what else I would do. So here I am.
Short and simple and sweet. That's true. I mean, I think a lot of people, young people especially, like, it's so hard to know what you want to do. And then sometimes people get stuck in this, like, they get stuck in a career that they don't really love. They get stuck in a job that is not necessarily something they're passionate about. And then they wake up, like, 5-10 years down the line of doing that, and they're like, oh my God, I'm not happy. I'm not doing what I love. I need to figure out what I love. And I think that's how you know you're on the wrong path, probably, is like, you wake up and all this time has gone by and you're like, I haven't really been happy for most of it. But I think you, as a business owner, you're like, you've been doing this whole time. You're pretty happy. Yes, there's highs and lows. There's hard moments, but you can't imagine doing anything else.
I just got it stuck in my head. And like I said, I made this plan in college, like, all right, how would I graduate in 4 years to be a graphic designer? I planned it every quarter.
And like, then after every milestone, you just, like, how do I get to the next level? And the next level.
Yeah, the next level. And how do I get this next gig? And how do I go direct? Or how do I not use placement agencies or whatever it is? It's just, I just wanted to be a graphic designer, art on the computer. That's all I wanted to do. And I was gung-ho and set mine towards it.
Awesome. Good advice. Do what makes you happy, right? Do what makes sense. So
also that makes you money too. Cause if I was to be happy, I just own a gallery and just do art.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a misconception with people. They think that, like, oh, you know, we're the whole saying, do what you love and you won't work a day in your life. That's bullshit, right? You work very hard. Like,
I work very hard.
Do what you love and working hard won't feel like a negative thing. I think that's
it's not like if you build it, they will come. Like, that's such horseshit. Like, right. No.
Yeah.
You have to build it and then tell people about it.
Yeah. And be like, have your whole life be about it. Just be about it. So now that you're a business owner, what are some setbacks you've experienced in that side of things? So we talked about you as a designer in an agency or in-house team or something like that. Tell me about some of the big setbacks that are top of mind as a business owner.
God, where do I begin? No, it's just setbacks. Well, you're constantly learning and trying new things and seeing what works and what doesn't work in your flow. And so when you go from solopreneurship to, like, a team, it's all going to be scalable. So, you know, just kind of learning to let go of control, learning to, just kind of, like, try new things and enable people to do their jobs that you've hired them to do. Mm-hmm. So you just have to, you know, eliminate roadblocks and empower them to do a good job, because that's what you're hiring them to do. And kind of remove yourself from the cog in the wheel when you can.
Yeah. So, get out of the weeds.
Get out of the weeds. It's hard. I think when you've been a solopreneur for a long time and you've been on your own a long time, you know, you're just used to doing it all. So letting go of some of that reins and letting other people help you. And so that way you can focus on other parts of your business. I think that's, you know, that's pretty hard. I think not micromanaging, right? Cause I, gosh darn it, always hated it when people micromanage me. So I got to, like, you know, not do that to other people. So I just try not to be some of those, like, people that I didn't like throughout the younger part of my career.
Yeah, I bet. Well, and I think that's something that's going to set you apart as a design firm, Amber Design, is like you want to take all of the things that you loved from being a designer in an agency and apply some of those things, but also take all the things that you really didn't love and make sure that you're not doing that, or that you have, you know, the Amber way of doing it.
Yeah.
That is a positive thing for people. So like,
right.
Not micromanaging, you know, empowering people to do their best work and to go after what they think is the right way to go and whatnot. So,
yeah. You know. So I think that's probably like my setbacks. And then, I don't know. Yeah. I think just that's probably where I'm at with that. That's my setback.
Yeah. You're doing a good job, I think. From my side of things, from my perspective, I'm the office coordinator or conductor of operations here at Amber Design. And I've helped with a lot of overcoming those setbacks with you. And it's been a joy to do that because you've done it so much more gracefully than you think you are doing. So
Okay. It's
cool to watch that. It's I've helped a lot of CEOs and just like business owners and managers in my life as a business professional, and you're doing a good job and you're skipping over a lot of the common mistakes I think a lot of people just get into because they're just trying to build really fast in their business, and you're doing it at this pace where you're very aware of where you are and how you're relating to others on your team. And that's commendable. It's hard to do. So
thank you.
You're doing good.
Thanks.
So what's the most important thing about moving forward after a setback in your career?
Reflection is probably one of the most important things you can do.
Yeah.
So something's happened, you gotta reflect on it. Like, okay. Cause it always takes two to tango. So it's like, how did it get here? You know, what caused this to happen? And now, okay, what am I going to do about it? So kind of making a plan to either adjust what just happened or make a plan to evolve and grow and keep moving to your next big adventure. So reflection, and then a lot of thought, and then kind of making that plan of attack of how you're going to make it happen and keep moving. So I've always kind of like, I guess, done that by nature, like, all right, this happened. It was sucky and it sucked, but like, all right, how did it
come? It suck. How do I get better?
Yeah. How do I move? Right. So if something bad happens, like, ah, shit, that sucked. And then it's like, okay, what can I do to make it better? And who can I call next for my next gig? So it's always that dialing for dollars, or who, you know, what am I going to do, you know, from a personal note to just kind of like move on.
Yeah.
Move forward.
It's important, that reflection piece is so important. Like you said, I think it is the most important thing, but make sure it's honest reflection, because a lot of people will look back at a mistake or an issue or a setback and they'll just tell themselves kind of like a bullshit story about what happened, and they won't actually be honest with themselves.
You have to be honest with yourself. Like, it always takes two to tango, right? Mm-hmm. So, how to deal with difficult conversations, right? So it typically takes two to get there, no matter what. And something that you might have done if you had did it differently or approached it differently, you know, could have really changed the course of action. So there's always something that you've done. There's always this equal and opposite, you know, reaction to a problem. And so typically it always gets there some way. It doesn't just, you're not just a victim in the situation.
Not always the other person. Sometimes it's a little about you.
Yeah. Like, you can't just play always the victim card. Like, sometimes it's something that you did or something that you could have done better, or it was a chain of events that happened. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to, you know, even accept the responsibility of maybe something you might've done on reflection and be like, okay, that happened. Moving on. Here we go. I'm going to try not to do it again, or make a plan to not to do that again. Or it was like, oh, I understand the chain of reaction of how we got here, whether it be on a business note, whether it be on a personal note, business note, whatever that is. You know, it was a chain of events that happened that led here. And both parties probably could have handled it differently or whatever it was, but this happened and there's nothing you can do about it. Thanks for everything and see you in the biz.
Exactly.
That's always how you end it.
Yeah.
See you in the biz. Thank you for the opportunity and see you in the biz.
Yes. Don't burn the bridge. Be nice. kill them with kindness, and you know,
I'll see you around, because you will. I promise you will see them again.
Well, and I think too, something that I see you do with your clients is when you have had to have a difficult conversation with someone, you look over the things, and like, even if you can't find anything that you did wrong necessarily, or you did that was negative in the conversation or the situation, you're still looking for things you could have improved on. How could you have made this 1% better in this way? And it might be something that's like, just comes down to a basic miscommunication. And that's not always anyone's fault, but there is something that we can improve on with those miscommunications. So like, I know that, for example, you and I have gone over your contract recently and added a few things that have become stuff that were things that maybe you didn't think about with other clients, and they ended up becoming a problem, but now we've added it, and that'll improve your business not only on your end, but it'll improve things for clients in the future too. So you're always trying to improve.
Also, people just have bad days. You have to just understand that too. So sometimes things are just said because they're having a bad day on a personal note. And sometimes it doesn't always bode well in a business conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
Life happens too.
It does. Oh man. So any closing thoughts, anything else that you could give as advice or thoughts on just how to recover from setbacks and move forward?
Nah, just keep fighting a good fight. You just got to keep moving, keep dialing for dollars, keep reaching out to your network. You know, if you keep moving, even just small steps, you're going to get there.
Yeah.
You're going to get there. Promise. It always works out.
It does. And on that note,
if you're willing to work for it, you're going to work. It's always going to work out.
Yes. You have to be willing. It's not just going to come to you.
You can't sit back. You got to keep marching.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I think there's lots of really valuable nuggets of information in this podcast for anyone, whether you're a designer or not. So if you like this podcast and you listened intently and got all the things from it, maybe you took some notes on some of the things you learned today, please like and subscribe to the podcast. We would really appreciate more subscribers, downloads, whatever podcast platform you're listening on. We really appreciate the positive reviews and constructive feedback too. So go to www.awesomeamber.com for your, if you would like to learn more about Amber and the amazing design that she does with her team. And if you need any design or branding work yourself, that's where you go. So thank you. And we'll see you on the next one of Amber Energy, the podcast.
Bye. Have a great day. Bye.